Hello and welcome to the Pan and Slam podcast. I'm Jason Konigsberg of panandslam.com, and today is a very special episode. It's our yearly episode of the best movies of the year. So today we're going to be looking at the best films to come out from 2022. It's an annual special that we're going to be doing, and 2022 was, in the end, this was a major upgrade in motion picture output after the pandemic desolated movie quality in 2020 and 2021. It really upended the entire movie industry. However, the movie theater experience is still lacking, most likely irreparably damaged from the pandemic, and it was already on the way down years before with things like Netflix and home theater systems and surround sound becoming so much more affordable and more, you know, high quality, better movies, Oscar caliber movies, and, you know, even what would have been blockbuster caliber movies going straight to streaming services like Netflix and Disney Plus and Amazon Prime. So the movie theater experience, and even when I went to the movies this year, which wasn't as often as it has been in previous years prior to the pandemic, theaters were mostly empty. I mean, 5-10 people tops in the theater, and on top of it, very sparse things, and not very crowded audiences other than the big blockbusters. So that seems to be the route that movie theaters are going. If Marvel and other big properties like that are what's keeping the cinemas alive this, you know, week, it's Avatar. Avatar's been the number one movie for the last 3 or 4 weeks since it opened in mid-December. And prior to that, it was the number one movie was Black Panther: Wakanda Forever. So Marvel, Avatar, the big blockbuster franchises, the big staples, that's what's keeping movie theaters in business. If you take a complaint about those franchises all you want, but if you take those franchises out, then I don't know if we'd have movie theaters anymore. I think they'd all be out of business. So only $100 million plus blockbusters at around the 3-hour mark will dominate multiplexes. That seems to be the lesson learned here from 2022 and what movie theaters are like. Art house and independent movies will be relegated to limited runs and quick streaming turnaround. I am glad that I didn't see some movies in the theaters, because I remember last year I went out of my way to see certain titles, and then 2 weeks later they were streaming on HBO Max or Hulu or Amazon Prime, and I was like, why did I waste my $15-$20? And if I went with a second person, why did I waste my $30 almost? It just seems like a waste of money now going to the movie theaters, so that's a real shame. But there were actually, unlike 2020 and 2021, some really good movies that were worth waiting for and worth your time on streaming. And if you were so bold to go venture out and see them in the theaters, it was probably a worthwhile experience. And also at the same time, with these streaming services, you'd better just hope that you have the right streaming service for the movie that you want to see. So if you're really counting on seeing this movie and you're going to pass on theaters, and then it comes to a streaming service and, oh, you don't have Paramount Plus, or you don't have Peacock, or you don't have whatever it may be, Showtime, you want to make sure that you have those things. So it sort of, you know, is limited, whereas in the old days, everyone would go to the movie theater. That was the only way you could see the movie. And then everyone would on demand and pay for it. I guess you could pay on demand. You know, there's higher prices for newer releases on Amazon Prime and things like that. But it just, you know, it seems different. It seems more limited. It seems more selective. And why would I want to pay for a streaming service when I really only, you know, want to watch one or two titles on there? It's just the way the world is now. And they keep saying that eventually these streaming wars, something, you know, is going to give, and we'll be stuck with 2 or 3 services instead of 9 or 10, which are currently, seems like that's the amount of streaming services that a lot of people, if you want to have all of them, you got to have a lot. What stood out in 2022, because I did start this podcast off optimistically. I mean, it is about the best movies of the year. When you look at the best movies of 2021 compared to the best movies of 2022, This is a major, major upgrade, a major step up. There were titles that were really worth venturing out to the theaters if you did pay top dollar for, or, you know, seeking out and giving your undivided attention to on your streaming services. It was a special year for movies, and it seems like maybe art is rebounding and it's not just relegated to, you know, TV shows and binge-worthy shows on Netflix or HBO or things like that. Now it seems that motion pictures are getting back, finding their footing again. And what stood out the most to me in 2022, when I'm looking at my best of the year list, first of all, last year I struggled doing a top 10. I think I had a top 4 or 5, and then the next 5 movies I had were like Matrix Resurrections, King Richard, the James Bond movie No Time to Die. All are fine films, but any other year, I mean, any other year prior to 2020, they wouldn't have been on my top 10. Here, I came up with a top 15. I thought there were 15 movies that are worth me discussing and talking about that should be considered best of the year. So I found that pretty exciting, okay, for a person who loves movies. I mean, the years past, I would do top 10s, top 15s, top 20, sometimes even more than 20. I'm thinking back years like 2004, 2006, 2007, 1999, certainly. So many exciting, you know, movies to talk about during those years. This year, the fact that I managed to squeeze in 15 titles that I wanted to talk about, that's an accomplishment. So kudos to the movie industry finding their footing and getting things right. And there are movies here that I'm not even going to mention that are going to be big Oscar contenders and that are on a lot of critics' top 10 lists, but I'm just going by my top 15 here. We'll do an Oscars podcast and a, you know, awards podcasts another day, but today I just want to focus on what I thought were the best movies, my favorite movies of 2022. And what stood out in 2022 were these are movies about human experiences, and not just human experiences in America, but human experiences around the world. Some of the best films of this year were about people living in different countries in different time periods. Just off the top, you know, looking at my list, movies about pre-independence Ireland, pre-independence India, a bunch of rich people vacationing in Greece during the 2020 lockdown. These were three of the most exciting movies and entertaining movies I saw this year. A movie about the outskirts of modern-day Hollywood took place there in a horror, terror, you know, ravaging people out in the desert outside Los Angeles. It was really a movie about ancient Scandinavia and Norse mythology, and it was fascinating, some fascinating movies here. Those settings alone offered visions and plots that allowed the viewer to be transported into different experiences of not only settings, but also cultures. You know, through these, the list of my 15 best movies of the year, I got to live through cultures of poverty and cultures of wealth beyond what I can ever imagine. Okay, and I'm sure that's beyond what most other audiences could ever and would ever want to imagine. Poverty in the Detroit slums through a female outsider's point of view. I got to see one of the best movies of this year offered me the Asian American experience in a most exciting, all over the place, unique fantasy. And a movie about the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic just juxtaposed with the COVID-19 pandemic and parallels between the two eras. That was a fascinating and visually impressive movie in the ways that I never thought. And also in the end, I'm looking at my list and there's just a couple of names here that if I told you they directed and starred in one of the best movies of the 90s or the early 2000s or even the 80s, you'd say, okay, I believe that. But in the end, one of the greatest directors of all time continued to impress and show us that not only is he one of the best to ever make a movie and generate empathy from audiences, but after nearly half a century of directing movies, he is one of the most consistent. And plus, one of the biggest movie stars from the past 40 years. He was one of the biggest movie stars of the 80s, the 90s, and the 2000s. In 2022, he showed us that he's one of the biggest movie stars of multi-generations for sure, with a sequel to the film that put him on the map and made him a household name. So without any further ado, I'm going to run down the top 15 best movies of 2022. Once again, 15, because there's actually 15 movies I really wanted to focus on and really wanted to talk about. And my number 15 favorite movie, actually 14 and 15, work as an interesting double feature. Both of these films came out this year, a few months apart in theaters, and now they're on streaming. But my number 15 was Pearl. Okay, Pearl was directed by Ty West. And it's an unnecessary but very interesting prequel to my number 14 movie, which I'll talk about, that's worth checking out. And director Ty West, he's directed a few horror movies. My personal favorite of his prior to these two was a film called The House of the Devil that was 100% all atmosphere. It felt like a movie John Carpenter could have directed in 1985, and it really had a, you know, retro throwback vintage feel to it. And this movie, Pearl, took place during the Spanish flu pandemic of 1918 to 1920, around then. I don't remember exactly what year, if they even say what year it is. And Ty West excels with his atmosphere and the cinematography and costumes, really transporting the audience. And Mia Goth, who also stars in X, and she's been a good actress for a little while. She was the best part of Gore Verbinski's flop, Cure for Wellness. She gives a fearless performance. And once again, Ty West is primarily, his name is associated with horror, and he's a horror director. This movie isn't scary, but it's definitely disturbing and topical. So I really thought Pearl was an interesting, fascinating movie that I would recommend. That was my 15th best movie of the year. And then my 14th best movie of the year was also directed by Ty West. It was called X. So now we're up to number 14. X, directed by Ty West, is an above average retro horror movie. Heavy influence from Texas Chainsaw Massacre and other, you know, sort of grindhouse B movies of the 70s. The atmosphere, I can just continue this. Whatever he directs, he's going to make you feel like you're in that time period. This did feel like it was filmed in, you know, the 70s. It could have, you know, been alongside something like, I don't know, The Last House on the Left. It's that's what makes this movie stand out. And it's definitely not for the squeamish. And despite the fact that it's called X and about a, you know, group of young, attractive people making an X-rated pornographic movie, this movie is not for the squeamish and not going to arouse anyone despite the subject matter. Once again, really, really good performance by Mia Goth as the lead role in both of these. I would say X is the better movie, but I think Pearl deserves to be mentioned here because, once again, they sort of complement each other and reflect our values and our times, one in the 70s, one in the 19-teens, 1920s, about 100 years ago. Pearl has the better lead performance from Mia Goth, but X is the better movie overall. So that's my 15th and 14th favorite movies. My 13th favorite movie of the year is from director Robert Eggers, and it is called The Northman. And this movie is really something interesting that I think a lot of people should seek out. Robert Eggers has, you know, made quite a name for himself over the past 8 years or so. His debut film, I believe, was 2015, called The Witch. Then in 2019, or 18 or 19, he had a really good movie that got a lot of popularity called The Lighthouse, with, once again, fearless, terrific performances from Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson. And Robert Pattinson obviously has gone on to be much more than just the Twilight heartthrob. He was Batman this past year on a movie that I'm, The Batman, that I'm seeing on a lot of best of the year lists. That will not be appearing on mine. But The Northman is probably Robert Eggers's, I'm not going to say it's his best movie. Well, he's made three feature films so far, and The Lighthouse definitely has the best acting. The Northman definitely is the most visually stunning. I mean, this, you can't look away. It's phenomenal to look at. Okay, I do wish I saw this on the big screen, because you can't, the screen is filled with so much unforgettable imagery, both, you know, graphic and grotesque, and absolutely stunning and beautiful. But yet his best overall movie, I still think, is his debut film. That would be The Witch. That movie, check out my review on panandslam.com. That movie really encapsulated American values, American fears about scapegoating and being different and religion and sort of how, you know, our culture started off on the wrong foot with the Puritans and their obsession with religion and their fear and fear of sex and stimulation. And it's a small, quiet movie, but it sticks 8 years later now. It has still stuck with me. But back to The Northman, which I think is the 13th best film of 2022. It's basically Conan the Barbarian, done in the style of an A24 movie and for modern audiences. It's about as brutal as Conan the Barbarian, but it just clearly looks like it was filmed in 2022 in the modern digital era. It's got a big stellar cast. They replaced Sumerian mythology from Conan with Norse references, and it has some commendable performances. The striking visuals alone are really what make it worth recommending. So Robert Eggers, if you haven't seen his previous two films, seek those out, and then seek out The Northman, and feel free to comment and see if you agree with me in my statement that it's, you know, not his best film, but definitely his best visually, most visually stunning film, The Northman. Moving on, number 12. I guess I'm sort of grouping the horror movies together this year. Number 12 was a very interesting movie. I saw it on Hulu. I believe it's still streaming on there. It's called Fresh, and it's about cannibalism. And I'm going to give this movie a lot of credit for being one of the most unsettling movies I've seen this year. I saw it, and I thought it was unsettling, but not too disturbing of a thriller. Yet here I am many months later, because I believe I saw it back in, April or May, maybe even before then. And it stuck with me. Definitely the movie that made me the most uncomfortable. If you value movies that can make you unsettled and squirm a little bit in your seat and then stick with you after it's over, then you'll want to see Fresh. An eerie performance from Sebastian Stan clearly helps. He gave a really good performance in this, and it kept my interest and kept me wanting and waiting to see what would happen next in a way that few modern movies have. So I give it a lot of credit. I believe it was directed by a female. I believe it was directed by a woman named Mimi Cave. I would love to see what she does next, if she, you know, goes on to be the next type of Robert Eggers or Ari Aster, and continues to put out interesting visions of horror and interesting, unique takes on just, you know, human experiences and how we're feeling trapped. And, you know, once again, these are all different, you know, stories. So far, you know, I've discussed four movies here in my top 15. Pearl takes place in the, you know, Spanish flu pandemic. X takes place in the 1970s. Northman is ancient Scandinavia, I believe maybe about 1,000 years ago. I'm not 100% certain. Fresh is modern times. He's holding people captive. A very claustrophobic horror type of movie. And then the next movie, lightening things up a little bit, my number 11 on my best of the year list, just missing the top 10. The Bob's Burgers movie. Yes, I think it helps if you are a fan of the TV show Bob's Burgers. But at the same time, I do know someone who saw this movie who is not a fan of the Bob's Burgers TV show, and he really did appreciate the movie. He's also a big champion of 2D animation, and it's not very often that 2D animated movies get released or even get made or get wide theatrical releases. What hurt this movie is it came out Memorial Day weekend. They had the slot there for a long time. And it came out the same weekend as Top Gun Maverick. So it wasn't really a box office hit. I don't think its budget was that high, but it made back its budget, hopefully. I'm not sure. However, I have rewatched it since then, because it's been streaming on, I think, HBO Max and Hulu. And you know what? It's kind of interesting, because even though I am a fan of the show, I found that the more I rewatched it, the songs were catchier. I thought the songs were a little more clever. I think the plot worked better. Maybe Bob's Burgers, just the style of it, it's not like Beavis and Butthead, where it's like, wow, I'm seeing these guys on the biggest screen possible. I never thought I'd see this. It works better maybe on the small screen, watching it in small doses, watching it, you know, when it's just in the background, it's something you're familiar with. If you like the show and you like the characters, I think you will like the movie. I certainly laughed a lot during it. I enjoyed it tremendously. Did it, you know, surpass my expectations? I don't know, but you know what? It was fun. I don't remember having that much fun and being that excited for a movie in quite some time. So for me, the Bob's Burgers was an event movie, and it does carry on and hold sway with the TV show. So it's sort of like a long episode that ties in with what happened at the end of the last season and the beginning of the new season. So I found it to be a delectable big screen debut. I enjoyed it. I didn't love it, but it's just missed my top 10. And now the top 10, I'm up to the big top 10 best movies of 2022. And number 10, I have Crimes of the Future. This is the best David Cronenberg movie in 15 years, going all the way back to what I think was his last good movie, or it turned out to be really good movie, because he hasn't made that many, and the ones that he has made in the last 15 years haven't been very good. Eastern Promises with Viggo Mortensen. The visuals, once again, stunning, okay? Only in the way that Cronenberg could do. I remember, I think it was last year or 2 years ago, Brandon Cronenberg, his son, he directed a movie called Possessor, which ended up on my top 10. I remember really liking it, but you know what? I don't remember much about it at this point. So he did a good job filling in for his father's shoes, and it was certainly a better movie than Dangerous Method or Cosmopolis or Map to the Stars. I just named three movies that he made since Eastern Promises. So I guess it was nice to have a Cronenberg back making Cronenberg-esque movies. But David Cronenberg, this movie, I do think will stand out and possibly be remembered and revered the way I still remember and revere Eastern Promises or History of Violence, or maybe even further, like some of his best movies like Videodrome. Because this movie to me had, you know, images and performances that were reminiscent of Videodrome, which is my personal favorite Cronenberg. I also saw a lot of elements of Naked Lunch and elements of Cronenberg's Crash, not the Best Picture winner, but the really bizarre, you know, erotic slash disgusting, unerotic Crash that he made back in the mid-90s. He is a master of body horror, once again, with indelible images that will resonate and stay long after the end. I'm thinking of the character with the ears sewn all over. It takes place in the near future. Really good, once again, performance by Viggo Mortensen. Fearless performance by Lea Seydoux, who's had a good couple of years. She was in, of course, No Time to Die, and she was a standout performance in last year's Wes Anderson movie, The French Dispatch. So she continues to do a really good job. Crimes of the Future, my 10th favorite movie of 2022. And moving down to number 9, Nope, Jordan Peele. I really liked Us. I really liked Get Out. I don't think either of those movies made my top 10, so maybe it's a sign of the times. But Jordan Peele, finally, I've liked all three of his feature films that he's directed. Finally made a movie that cracked my top 10, and Nope sort of felt like his Spielberg movie. It had a lot of elements of Jaws combined with elements from Close Encounters of the Third Kind. It's not as heavy-handed, and, well, it is heavy-handed at times, but maybe not so much on the hitting on the same themes as he did with Get Out, which was terrific, and Us, which I thought was a terrific continuation of those themes that he started. Here, he's touching on different things, animal torture, showbiz, celebrity, Hollywood history, and racism is still touched in there, absolutely, no denying that. But the performances from Daniel Kaluuya, especially, Kiki Palmer, she was annoying, I think, intentionally. And this is maybe the best role I've seen Michael Wincott in since, geez, I don't even know, at least 20 years, that's for sure. Okay, he was a mainstay villain in the 90s in movies like Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, Strange Days. I remember he was the main villain in the Eddie Murphy action comedy Metro, which didn't do so well at the box office, but I think that's one of Eddie Murphy's more underrated movies. So Nope stood out for me. Once again, outstanding cinematography. One of the criticisms I heard of this movie is he has so many ideas, but he doesn't know what to say with it. You could say that also about Us, and maybe even to a lesser extent about Get Out, but I at least give Jordan Peele credit for writing and directing and producing such spectacular, impressive movies that are about something and that will have you walking out and talking. And I mean, does he really say what he intended? Did he get the point across? Was he trying to do too much? that's up to the viewer to decide, but I was thoroughly entertained for the 2.25 hours that I was seeing Nope. Yeah, that once again, another big trend here. Movies used to be 2 hours, 90 minutes to 2 hours. Now, I mean, VHS is long gone, and multiplexes changed things where they didn't have to get, you know, 2 hour run times, you know, to get certain screenings in every day. So now movies just, you know, the length of a movie doesn't really matter anymore. People can sit through anything streaming, and they expect people to be able to sit through 3.5, you know, hours in the movie theaters. It's maybe asking a bit much, but Nope didn't feel too long. None of these movies that I'm mentioning here in my top 10, none of them really dragged too much, even though a significant number of them may have been, you know, over 2 hours or significantly over 2 hours. So that's my number 9. My number 8 best movie of the year. You may be surprised by this one. And it's not just because I enjoy his music. It's Weird, the Al Yankovic story. And this movie is something very, very interesting. First of all, anyone in the past, this goes pre-pandemic, going back to, you know, things like Bohemian Rhapsody and Straight Outta Compton. If you're sick of these musical biopics, the Elton John movie, it seems like there's a Whitney Houston movie out right now that's I haven't seen it yet, but it's not supposed to be very good, then this is the cure. Weird, the Al Yankovic story. Not only is it the cure for if you hate movie biopics or the, you know, the trends, I'm not going to say I hate all movie biopics. I love Straight Outta Compton. I liked Oliver Stone's The Doors. But if you, I guess, hate the cliches that have, because it's become so commonplace, then this movie is certainly the cure. And it's also one of the funniest movies in years. It reminded me of Anchorman or a Will Ferrell movie from 15, 20 years ago when he was making those kinds of, you know, really funny, silly spoof. You know, and this was a much needed spoof of the overused musical biopic subgenre. It's somewhere between This Is Spinal Tap. It's not as funny as This Is Spinal Tap, but it's certainly much better than Dewey Cox, Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox, John C. Reilly movie from about 15 years ago or so. I would say that Weird, the Al Yankovic story is on par, like I said, with some Will Ferrell movies, or definitely the Tenacious D movie, Tenacious D, Pick of Destiny, a movie that I love that it didn't do well in the box office, but I think Tenacious D fans really did enjoy it. The only way to see it was to have a Roku device. If you had that, you got to see it for free. And I don't know if there is a single shred of truth in this biopic, because essentially Weird Al Yankovic, if you know about his music, he makes parodies of songs. He takes songs and makes them funny, changes the lyrics, makes them about food usually, or sometimes about Star Wars, which he loves. Here, he took all the, you know, genre cliches, staples of musical biopics, and just messed with them, had fun with them. I don't think there's an ounce of truth in this. I know a little bit about his personal life because I grew up, I was a Weird Al Yankovic fan at a young age, and I still, you know, as in my adult years, I do enjoy his, you know, more recent output, newer movies. If I had a complaint about this movie, it's not that it wasn't funny enough. I would have wanted more Weird Al music. It had, I would say it had his biggest hits in there. Like, here's an example of how this movie, you can't, you know, take it. He reminds you how truthful and accurate it is at the beginning. But he blames Michael Jackson's a hack. And in this Weird Al movie, in the universe they create, he has an affair with Madonna, and she, you know, gets him on drugs, and, you know, and it has, and Madonna wants him to spoof her music so she could get that Madonna bump, and which is not accurate all the time. But also, Michael Jackson, his songs, Beat It and Bad, come out after Eat It and Fat. So it was the other way around. Obviously, Weird Al was spoofing Michael Jackson in the 80s, and this says that Weird Al's just, you know, Michael Jackson's just riding Weird Al's coattails. So that's just one example of, you know, the humor, and you can't take it seriously, but it's a very, very funny movie. Really good performance from Daniel Radcliffe. Comedies, you know, back then, or even still today, don't usually get the respect they deserve on top 10 lists or movie critics and award shows. But I thought Weird Al was one of the funniest movies I'd seen in a while. Just wish they had a little bit more Weird Al music scattered in throughout the soundtrack. But otherwise, really funny movie. Probably the most I laughed out loud at any movie in quite some time, as far as new movies go, movies produced in the last 2 or 3 years. So that was my number 8. My number 9 movie, I'm sorry, my number 7 movie, because we're doing a countdown, is one of the biggest movies of the year, and also one of the best, and it's been on a lot of top 10 lists, and I've got to say, you know what, it deserves it. Top Gun Maverick. It was one of the best movies of the year. Came out Memorial Day weekend, same weekend as Bob's Burgers. And it made a ton of money, and it deserved it. It really is one of the best action-packed, stimulating, you know, movies. And Tom Cruise, the 1986 Top Gun, that was the movie that put him, I wouldn't say put him on the map. Risky Business came before. He was in other movies prior to Top Gun, obviously, but Top Gun was what made him the A-list superstar that he still is today. That's the movie that made Tom Cruise. And here he returns with respect, different director, Tony Scott passed away, and they were talking about this sequel. This sequel has been gestating, I would say, maybe since the late 90s or the early 2000s, Tony Scott was still alive. But Joseph Kosinski did a really good job directing it. Jennifer Connelly, Miles Teller, I was hesitant about them being in it. They did excellent. Ed Harris was good in his small role. It was nice to see Jerry Bruckheimer's name. In the 80s and 90s, he was one of the biggest action movie producers, blockbuster makers, producers that there was. And then it seemed like, I don't know, I guess these franchises and comic book movies sort of destroyed that for him. And I mean, I don't think he's crying for money, because he certainly made enough off all of his big hits back in the day. But he still knows how to produce a movie, and Tom Cruise still knows how to be an emotional, intense action star in a way that few others can. Val Kilmer shows up in this, and if you know anything about Val Kilmer, he's lost his voice, so that's why you don't see him much in movies anymore. But they wrote that into his character's part as the Iceman, so that was an iconic early role for Val Kilmer, as well as an iconic early role for Tom Cruise. And yeah, it just, you know what? Was the jingoism there? Yeah, sure. Was the nationalism there? Absolutely. Was the story cliched, where it's just the enemy and they're not stating who the enemy is because they don't want to upset, because we're in a very different place now than we were in the 80s during the Cold War. Now we're here, you know, where movies open up globally on the same weekend, or movies might even open up earlier in Europe or Asian markets before they open up in the United States. And we rely so much on the money coming in from China and all these other nations that they don't want to offend anybody. So movies are very different now than they were when Top Gun came out, but Top Gun still managed to find what works. And it worked, and Tom Cruise continues to impress. Is he going to get an Oscar nomination for it? I don't know. Did he give a great performance? Yes. Was it as good as his performance in, I don't know, his Oscar-nominated turns in films like Born on the 4th of July, Jerry Maguire, Magnolia? Probably not. You know what? And if Top Gun Maverick came out in 1999, would that be on my top 10 movies of the year? Probably not as well, but you know what? I would still say it was a great movie. I would still say it was a lot of fun, and it was what a blockbuster should be. And Tom Cruise knows how to be Tom Cruise and does it pretty well. So if you could just keep that Scientology love in check, he still can make a really, really good movie and not be a PR nightmare. So that's number 7. Number 6 is a movie that, if you talk about energy and excitement, this might have been one of the most energetic and exciting movies I've seen in recent years, that's for sure. It was called RRR, and it was from India, Bollywood movie, or Tollywood movie, I believe it's in Tamil. And this is just wild, energetic, entertaining, a historical epic, mind you, and one of the most unique movies you'll ever see. It had a plot similar to The Departed, with action stylings of The Matrix, and filled with Indian revolutionary pre-independence history that I'm sure I certainly don't know enough and all of what they were talking about. But you know what? It was really, really one of the most exciting movies. Over 3 hours, did not have to look at my cell phone or check my watch or anything like that, because I didn't know where this movie was going to go. One second it's gripping, intense, bloody, violent, and then the next they could be singing and dancing like a typical Bollywood movie. So this was a really, really exciting movie. Just so the best way is, it reminded me of The Matrix. Okay, The Matrix with Indian, Bollywood, jungle elements and exotic locales, and history goodies too. I'm sure the more you know about Indian culture and Indian history, the more you will get out of the messages and the references in this movie. I also thought it was fun seeing Allison Duty in a movie again. She plays a small role in this, and you may remember her as the love interest, the Nazi, who gets her comeuppance in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. But RRR, cannot recommend that movie enough. It's worth the 3+ hours. Two dynamic performances, and the great supporting performance. I looked up his name, Jay Devigny. I'm maybe mispronouncing it, but really, really outstanding movie. They're pushing it for Oscar promotion, hoping that it'll get Best Picture, Best Director, and certainly will probably get a Best International Movie of the Year nomination. However, I would not mind seeing some of the performances from some of the actors, the lead actors, get nominated, and Ajay Devigny as a supporting role. RRR, exciting, energetic. You're not going to be bored. Okay, it might not make your top 10, but you know what? You're not going to be bored. And for me, that counts for a lot. When a movie can surprise me and stimulate me and entertain me in a way that I can't say I've been entertained quite like that before, I give that a lot of credit. Once again, as I was talking earlier in this podcast about experiences, reliving experiences. Look at this. I go from a movie that's, super American, gung-ho, reliving, American Air Force experience. I've never been an Air Force pilot. I'm never going to be an Air Force pilot. But you know what? When I was in Top Gun Maverick, I felt I was in that cockpit, and wow. And once again, RRR, I felt I was in that jungle. Tiger coming at me, okay? Keeping him off. Very, very exciting. You gotta, with both of those movies, and especially with RRR, you need to really let your imagination go and just pretend that, okay, maybe they have enough strength to do this feat or this action with this animal and this creature. But it works. If you can suspend your disbelief just enough, which I think you have to with almost all movies, okay, especially big blockbusters, you're going to have a lot of fun with RRR. So that was my number 6 favorite movie of the year. I'm going from the Indian experience, okay, from India, pre-independence India under British colonialism, now to the modern-day Asian-American, Chinese-American experience with the spectacular, one of the most talked-about movies of the year, Everything Everywhere All at Once. It's another A24 movie, and I tell you, for as much as RRR surprised me and kept me entertained for 3.25 hours, I think Everything Everywhere All at Once does the same thing for the Chinese, the modern Chinese-American experience. You never know what's going to happen from scene to scene, line to line, even sometimes at certain moments, frame to frame. It's 2.25 hours. Once again, did it need to be 2.25 hours? No, I'm sure a lot of these movies could have been cut down 15, 20 minutes each. But for the most part, during Everything Everywhere All at Once, I was swept away and taken to this. It's our world, okay? It has moments of, very banal discussions about paying taxes and paying bills on time, because the family owns a laundromat and they need to make sure they can pay their bills. But then it becomes one of the most fun, inventive, and imaginative movies of the year. A great slice of Asian American life. I'm not Asian American, but this, in its own unique, imaginative way, I was like, oh, okay, it was an interesting way to experience another culture. And that's what great movies should be doing, getting audiences transported and experiencing different worlds, different cultures. It had action, it had fantasy, it had romance. A lot of credit is being given to Michelle Yeoh. She delivers a fantastic performance. Ke Huy Quan, who's most known for his child actor roles in The Goonies, and I'm mentioning Indiana Jones a second time in this podcast. He was Short Round in Indiana Jones 2, the Temple of Doom. So, and this is probably his most memorable performance other than those two child roles that he had back in the mid-80s, 84 and 85 with the Goonies. Everything Everywhere All at Once is very much topical, very much a product of its time, and I mean that in a positive way, not that it's overly woke. I didn't feel like it was woke as I was watching it, reflecting our busy and combustible lifestyle. This is a movie where I saw it, and the more I think about it, the more I love it. Great James Hong performance. He's an Asian actor who's been acting busy since I don't know exactly when. He's in his 90s now, if I'm not mistaken. I watched Airplane a few nights ago. He had a small, I think, non-speaking role in that. He was, of course, in Chinatown and The Two Jakes, both with Jack Nicholson. Wayne's World 2 with Mike Myers. He plays Tier Carrere's father, Cassandra's father. That's a very funny scene. But he's been in so many movies. He was in Blade Runner, of course, The Man Who Makes the Eyes. So James Hong, really, really good. Nice to see he's getting good work and good performances at this age. And I've got to mention, I can't talk about Everything Everywhere All at Once without mentioning Jamie Lee Curtis, okay, one of the few non-Asian actors who was given a major role in that movie. And if they're talking Best Supporting Actress nomination for her, and she deserves it. For as bad as she may have been in Halloween Ends, which, once again, it's not her fault. She's a terrific actress. She's been good in everything, but she's been in a couple of really bad movies, especially bad Halloween movies. For as bad as Halloween Ends was, I feel like her supporting turn in Everything Everywhere All at Once more than makes up for that. She's terrific. You forget it's her. It's a very unglamorous role for her. But then, once again, the changes and the images, you're gonna remember her, and Michelle Yeoh, and there's a reason why this movie, I believe it came out last April, March or April, and it's sort of been an Oscar front runner ever since. That's a long time to be a front runner, but it's worth the hype. Everything Everywhere All at Once, every bit is, you know, surprising and visually stunning and stimulating and entertaining as RRR and everything else that I've mentioned on this list. So that's my number five. My fourth best movie of the year, Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery. And Knives Out came out in 2019. I gave it 3 stars. I enjoyed it. It was a surprising whodunit where you know what happens. The murder happens early on, but then there's so many twists abound. In the last 20 minutes, it was twist after twist after twist, and it was so much fun with an ultra, super, super liberal message, which I don't mind. But when you're beating the audience over the head with that message, it can be a little bit much. And also, it had Jamie Lee Curtis. Once again, a very good Jamie Lee Curtis movie from the original Knives Out. Now, here's the sequel, Glass Onion. And this is at least as good as the original Knives Out. But you know what? I'm going to say it made me appreciate the original Knives Out even more. And therefore, I think because of that, I gotta say the Glass Onion is probably the better movie. I mean, if this came out in 2019, would it have made my top 10? I'm not sure, but it was really, really fun and exciting. Kept me guessing. Love the performances. I think Daniel Craig actually gives a better performance in this as Benoit Blanc than he did in the original Knives Out. And you gotta hand it to Rian Johnson. He sure knows how to write and direct a whodunit. He proved it with Knives Out, one of the best whodunits of its decade, its era. And I think he may have topped himself here with Glass Onion. So he's a director who really foils expectations. He made The Last Jedi, the 2017 Star Wars sequel that I like, that was pretty divisive, I guess because it was different. It sort of left them nowhere to go in the third movie, which is maybe why Rise of Skywalker was so bad. But he messes with your expectations and conventions. Never before has there been a sci-fi time-traveling movie quite like Looper. Never before has there been a teen drama mystery quite like Brick. So Rian Johnson has proven that he really will mess with audience conventions. And he doesn't mess with audience and conventions too much in Glass Onion. And once again, you got to suspend your disbelief. But I love, this was about rich people getting away in Greece during the pandemic. It takes takes place in May 2020 when everything was still shut down and people wearing masks everywhere, and you're seeing how the other half lives here. Once again, Glass Onion reference there with the Beatles song. I loved how they used that at the end credits. Janelle Monáe gives a standout performance in this, and it does, Glass Onion does keep you guessing, especially towards the end. The whole time you're guessing who did it, where's this going to go next. And it does have a super liberal message. Edward Norton plays a not so thinly veiled version of Elon Musk. And I'll just say enough with that, but that lets you know where this movie is at politically. And yeah, it's very, very fun, very entertaining, will keep you on your toes. And Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery, one of the better sequels, one of the best mysteries of recent years, and the fourth best movie of 2022. And now I move to number three. We're going back to horror here. Number three, I talked about some disturbing movies that I saw that just missed my top 10. Here's one that really stuck with me, and this is maybe one of the scariest and great performances and a lot of twists and surprises, and almost felt like two or three movies at times. My third favorite movie of 2022 was Barbarian. I mentioned how one movie got me to sort of experience poverty through Detroit through a woman's eyes, through her point of view. That would be Barbarian. This is one of the best horror movies of recent years. This is a movie, I thought it came out, I saw it around Halloween time, sometime in October, and I thought, forget Halloween Ends. I saw it after I saw Halloween Ends. This is what everyone should see. It's smart. It's very scary. It's a social commentary on poverty and those that have too much and those that don't have enough, because a Hollywood star owns a property in Detroit and he goes back to visit it. Once again, talk about Me Too, talk about, social injustices and social movements, race, celebrity, so much more, motherhood, cycles of abuse that aren't talked about enough, and maybe there's a reason they don't talk about it, because this is one of the more disturbing movies, probably the most disturbing movie I've ever seen. Since I don't mind being disturbed, I give it credit for that, and I put it at number three. This is what the Candyman remake wishes that it could have been. So that movie did not sit well with me. I thought it was beating you over the head with its message. And the other one, the original 1992 Candyman, was heavy-handed with its message, I thought. Here, this has the same, similar messages, similar themes, not as heavy-handed, and way scarier than any Candyman movie I've ever seen. So this movie holds up. Terrific leading performance. Terrific, and it's got Justin Long in it. And if you know anything about Justin Long in horror movies, it usually doesn't work out for him too well. I'm thinking of Jeepers Creepers and Tusk, and my favorite horror movie with him, actually the one where he probably got off the easiest, was Drag Me to Hell. If you haven't seen that, check out Drag Me to Hell. But Barbarian, terrific horror movie, very scary, very disturbing, not for the faint of heart. But if you want to be scared for 2 hours, check out Barbarian. And that was number three. And now number two, I believe there were two truly great movies this year. Okay, 3 through 15 that I've talked about are all really good movies that I liked so much that I wanted to talk about them on this podcast. I couldn't limit it to just a top 10. But now these are the two movies that I think should win Best Picture. Don't think there was a single flaw really in any of them. And number two, I say, and I mentioned how it one of the best directors of all time, and he's been one of the best directors of all time for nearly 50 years. If you didn't think he was, he certainly solidified that he's maybe one of the most consistent best directors of all time. Steven Spielberg, with his autobiographic, cathartic tale of his childhood growing up and his love for movies, The Fabelmans. The more you know about Steven Spielberg's childhood experiences and life and struggles, the less surprises there will be. But you know what? Even if you know, if seeing this movie a second time, I'm sure I'm going to love it just as much as I did the first time. It's a terrific film, the best empathy generator of any movie from 2022 or from any year. This would be on my top 10 almost any year that this movie came out, I think. The Fabelmans, tons of, you know, great references to the time period when he's growing up in the 50s and 60s. He moves around from New Jersey to the Sun Belt, Phoenix, Arizona suburbs there, Northern California. His parents go through a divorce at a time when now today, I mean, it's more marriages end in divorce than happily ever after. And this was a time when that was sort of taboo. He grew up in a time where in places where being Jewish was sort of a taboo. He's, you know, his child, the main character's upset that they're the only house that doesn't have Christmas lights, the only house that doesn't celebrate Christmas. They do Hanukkah instead. And it really made him feel like an outsider. And I do know from Spielberg, you know, in interviews saying how he hated being Jewish growing up and being different, not being able to celebrate the other holidays with all the other kids and asking, why me? Why am I like this? But when you look at Spielberg's filmography, he obviously, and The Fablemans touches on him coming to, you know, terms with his family and his religion and his Judaism as part of his identity, but it's really there in throughout his films. I'm mentioning Indiana Jones for a third time. That's all about Jewish vengeance, and certainly the way he directed his films, Schindler's List, and Munich for one, my God, and Saving Private Ryan. He throws in references there that if a non-Jewish director directed that movie or any of those movies, I'm not saying they wouldn't be good. I'm just saying they would be different, okay? You could clearly tell it was directed by Jewish eyes. And The Fablemans has a lot of those themes in it. And it's about his love for movie making and the dynamics of his parents being so different. His mother being artsy and a dreamer and a dancer, and, you know, his love of the arts came from her. And his father worked in computers, brilliant scientist, knew a lot about science, and he explained the science of movie making to him. And that's how Steven Spielberg got the ability to have this expensive hobby of making, filming, editing movies, processing, developing the film. It was not easy to do that as a hobby in the 50s and 60s when he did do it as a child. Nowadays, anyone with a cell phone, right, you can make a movie. So very, very, very emotionally powerful movie. Goes by very quick. He's a master of writing, directing, editing. The cinematography is great. And it has, the last 5 minutes are the best scene you'll see in any movie this year. Fablemans, my number two movie of the year, and my number one movie of the year. It's funny, but it's also significantly more depressing than some of these other films. My favorite movie, the number one best movie, in my opinion, of 2022, The Banshees of Inisherin. Directed by Martin McDonagh, who of course made In Bruges, which I loved, and Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri, which I loved at first and then saw it again, and it didn't quite have that same, resonate with me the same way as it did the first time. It felt like a Coen Brothers movie, but not as good as one of the better Coen Brothers movies. Here, I don't know, I've only seen Banshees of Inisherin once, and I gotta tell you, this to me was a great movie. Resonated deep with me. Great movie about friendship, about depression, about the inability and the fear that men have of moving forward with their lives, even when they have opportunities to move out and move on and change, and fear of change. It had also the most beautiful, I've talked about beautiful cinematography in a lot of movies, okay? A lot of movies this year I've said that. RRR, The Northman certainly, Avatar Way of Water didn't make my top 10. I gave it a positive review. Check out my review on panandslam.com. But this movie, the real, I don't know how much CGI doctoring was done, but man, does this make the Ireland countryside and the island of Inisherin look gorgeous. I'd rather go here than go to Pandora, or the Pandora in Way of Water, which looked like the, you know, Bora Bora version of Pandora. Both beautiful movies, but this was the most beautiful film of the year. Two of the best performances of the year. Three of the best performances of the year. Colin Farrell, Brendan Gleeson as the two friends, or former friends. It's tough to describe. Fantastic. And Kerry Condon gives a great supporting turn as Colin Farrell's sister. So this is a fantastic movie. It's funny. It has you... You know, it's depressing, it has an ending that stuck with me, that, you know, surprised me, and maybe the less you say about this movie, the better. Just see Banshees of Inisherin. It moved me emotionally more than any movie I've seen in 2022. That's my favorite film of 2022, and that is the best of the year for 2022. So this was a big step up from previous years. I remember 2019 being like, oh my God, the year of Parasite and Midsommar and The Irishman and so many other movies, Marriage Story, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. 2019 was a wealth of really, really exciting, great movies in cinema. Like I said, even movies like Knives Out and Ford versus Ferrari didn't make my top 10 in 2019. That's how good of a year for movies 2019 was. 2020, not so much. I can't really say that. 2021, I can't really say that I was too, you know, moved by much last year. But this year, there was two true masterpieces and 13 other movies that I really wanted to talk about, that I couldn't wait to talk about on this podcast. And I'm glad I had the chance to, and I hope you enjoyed it. So I'll leave you with that. There's my top 15. Those are the ones you should seek out, and hopefully they'll be big award contenders. And even if they're not, I stand by. Those are the best movies of 2022. I'm Jason Koenigsberg of PanAndSlam.com. Live long, prosper, and watch movies.